Welcome to the Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast with the team at Mach 1 Financial Group. The Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast starts now.
Thanks for joining us for another Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast. Walter Storholt here alongside David Lee of Mach 1 Financial Group, Retirement Income Planning Specialist, here in Northwest Arkansas, helping you learn more about the financial world each and every week. And on today's podcast, we're going to talk about some of the great questions that we get from listeners here in the area. By the way, if you want to submit a question to the show, just go to mach-1financial.com. That's mach-1financial.com, and you can submit a question to the Mach 1 Market Moment podcast. Our first stop of the week, David, is going to take us to Chip in Rogers for a good question about interest rates. Chip says, if interest rates start to go up over the next couple of years, what kind of effect, if any, should I expect it to have on my portfolio?
That's a great question, Chip. And the conventional wisdom is, and I subscribe to this, I suppose, the conventional wisdom is that obviously as interest rates go up, bond values will necessarily go down. So I would expect that if you have bond funds in your portfolio, especially if they're long-term bond funds, i.e. inside the mutual fund, most of the bonds in that portfolio have maturity dates that are far out in the future. Rising interest rates will have more of a detrimental effect on long-term bonds and bond funds than on short-term bonds and bond funds. So you can expect that any bond funds that you have would decline in value in a rising interest rate environment. Any stocks or stock funds that you have, rising interest rates would likely slow the rate of growth down on stocks as well, because as interest rates go up, for example, the housing market tends to slow down, right? Because as interest rates go up, people can't afford quite as much house as they could if the interest rate was lower. So they'll slow down their purchasing or perhaps downsize or not purchase as big of a house as they would have. And the housing market is a really, really critically important component of consumer spending. We are a consumer spending driven economy in the United States. The more consumers spend, the more the market tends to go up. And if you think of all the consumer spending that goes into the housing market, because it's not just the loan, it's not just the house itself and the construction workers and so forth that are paid from the building of that house, but it's also the furniture industry and the appliance industry and the lawn care industry and the termite control industry. And I mean, you could go on and on. The fencing industry, you could go on and on and name a whole bunch of industries that are affected by the housing market. So as interest rates go up, that would likely slow housing down, which will slow down a number of areas of the economy. Therefore, it's probably going to have the effect of slowing down the growth rate of any stock funds. Doesn't mean that they'll go negative necessarily. It would just mean that they would likely slow down the rate of growth rate of any stock funds. So I would anticipate that bond funds would probably go negative. Stock funds would slow down their rate of growth. And so that's part of why you want to have, like we've talked about so many times over the course of this podcast, you want to make sure you have a portion of your portfolio that is guaranteed, where you have a certain amount of income that you can rely on that's not going to fluctuate with changing interest rates, such as Social Security and fixed annuities. You want to have a core of your portfolio that is dependable, that you can rely on, so that you can weather the inevitable ups and downs of the stock market or the interest rate market.
It's a really good question, Chip. And yeah, it's going to have an effect. And a lot of different little moving parts are going to always kind of affect your portfolio and interest rates. It's interesting to me to see the ripple effect, not just the fact that there's going to be effect, but all the ripples that it has throughout the economy. And you have to be looking at things on kind of a macro level like that sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
Other times it's more of a micro level decision. And that may be what Doug is thinking about. He is the contributor of our next question here. Doug in Bella Vista says, is a reverse mortgage a bad idea? I've been thinking about it as a way to have a little more money to spend on travel during our early years of retirement.
Okay, that's a great question. I get this question from time to time in my office. And here's my philosophy on it. I think that reverse mortgages can make sense as long as you, personally, I would recommend that you view it as a last resort option. there are some circumstances where it may not be a last resort option. For example, let's say that you don't have any children or anyone that you plan to leave the money to, or you do have children and you don't like them and you don't want to leave them anything. A reverse mortgage could be a way to go in that situation. I've had clients that have been in this situation before that didn't have children, and I said, you know, there's really nothing that you're doing with all that equity. There's nobody that you're planning to leave this house to after you guys pass away. Why don't you just use a reverse mortgage as a way to convert all that equity into income? So that's one scenario where it may make sense. If you don't have anybody that you plan to leave the house to, and if you plan, and this is critically important, if you plan to stay in the house for your life, barring health problems that would force you out of the house, for example, into a nursing home or assisted living facility or something like that, then I would say it could be good. If you do have beneficiaries that you want to leave the house to, then I would say a reverse mortgage only makes sense as an option of last resort. So here again, it's critically important that the plan is that you desire to stay in your house for your lifetime, barring something that would force you out of your house into a nursing home or assisted living type scenario. If that's you, and even if you do have kids that you want to leave the house to, if something were to happen to you, then a reverse mortgage could only be considered as an option of last resort. If you've gotten down to, you know, where you've used most of your financial resources and you've got a lot of equity tied up in your home and you want to stay in that home for life, then yeah, I guess it's about the only option you have at that point. You could use a reverse mortgage to generate income that will last you for the rest of your life. So I can't make a definitive statement that a reverse mortgage is either a good idea or a bad idea. I would say in most situations, I recommend to people, I would only consider a reverse mortgage as an option of last resort. But like I said earlier, there are situations, there are certain family situations where it may make sense, even if it's not an option of last resort. And the great thing about if you do decide to get a reverse mortgage, one of the great things about a reverse mortgage is because it is actually a loan, in other words, you're borrowing equity from your house that eventually has to be paid back at your death with the sale of the house. The bank loan, the reverse mortgage loan, has to be paid back with the sale of the house. Since it is a loan, it is therefore tax-free income. So that's one of the great things about it, and it is guaranteed to last for your lifetime. But you do have to realize that you do continue to own the home, so therefore you are continuing to be responsible for the upkeep and maintenance and the taxes and the insurance. And if you ever fail to pay the taxes and insurance or fall behind on it, you could have your home repossessed by the bank. So there are some things to be careful of. Again, I'm not prepared to just say it outright that it's either a good idea or a bad idea. It's very situationally dependent.
Lots of good questions so far on the podcast this week. Good ones so far about reverse mortgages and interest rates going up and all that. And we'll have one more here, David, that we'll get in from Katie, who has a great question. You talk about getting questions all the time. You get the reverse mortgage one a lot. I bet you get this one as well. Katie's in Pea Ridge and says, do I need to have $1 million saved before I think about retiring? It seems like most of my friends have $1 million or more. Always that big target amount that people are focused on.
That's right. That's a great question, Katie. I'm glad you asked it because it is something that can be kind of deceiving about this whole retirement planning thing. Retirement planning isn't about achieving a certain number before you say, you know, okay, now I've made it, I'm ready to retire. Retirement is really about income, period, plain and simple. Do I have enough income based on the standard of living that I want to live at to last for the rest of my life? And so, for example, if you spend $200,000 a year, if that's the standard of living that you're accustomed to, then $1 million is probably nowhere close to enough, right? But if you're used to a standard living of, say, $40,000, $50,000 a year, yeah, $1 million may be more than, probably is more than enough. So what we do is, because everybody's situation is unique to them and different, We do a retirement analysis for everyone that comes in the door where we take into account your specific scenario. For example, are you married? You know, are we supporting one life or two lives throughout retirement? How much income do you need to have coming in each month to support your desired lifestyle? How much income do you have coming in from certain sources or will have coming in from certain sources such as Social Security and or pensions? And then we would say, well, okay, so you need, let's give you a scenario. Let's say you need $5,000 a month coming in between you and your spouse, you've got $3,000 a month coming in. Well, that's a $2,000 per month, what we call income gap, or $24,000 per year. And then we would say, well, you know, assuming a conservative, say 4%, 5%, 6% rate of return, how much of a portfolio would we need to have to generate a $24,000 a year income gap for life? It's a fairly simple math problem. I'm probably oversimplifying it for purposes of the podcast here because we do have to account for taxes and inflation and things like that. But ultimately, it does come down to a math problem. And no, there's not one size fits all for retirement. So it doesn't matter if you look at all your friends and you say, well, they're all saying they need, you know, $1 million or $2 million or $5 million to retire. And I'm nowhere close to that, so I'll never be able to retire. That is not the case. That is not the case. It all comes down to lifestyle. How much monthly income do you need to live life at your desired lifestyle? And then we'll help you figure out how big your portfolio needs to be to get there. And then if you're not there yet, we'll show you what you need to do to get to that point by the time you're ready to retire.
Lots of good questions on today's podcast. And David, if people have questions of their own, I know that in a first meeting and an initial review of someone's portfolio, I'm guessing these are the kinds of questions that you field during those talks.
Absolutely. All these questions on today's podcast are all very common ones. So if you're listening and you've thought, man, I don't know if I've got enough money to come in and see them, or I don't know if, you know, I've got this question, but they're just going to think it's a stupid question or whatever. I assure you, in the 12 years that I've been doing this, and I've seen literally a few thousand couples in those 12 years, I'll bet you there's not very many questions or situations that I haven't seen. And so there's no stupid question. There's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about. If you have questions and you want them answered, don't be shy. Call or email us or log on and schedule an appointment, and I'll be happy to answer whatever questions you may have.
Remember, the number to call to get in touch with the Mach 1 team is 479-876-2100. That's 876-2100, and you can always find them online by going to mach-1financial.com. Here in Northwest Arkansas, David Lee, Kyle Alexander, and the team at Mach 1, the folks to turn to for your questions when it comes to retirement, income planning, and overall financial planning. 479-876-2100. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. We'll talk to you on the next Mach 1 Market Moment.
Investment advisory services are offered through Coppell Advisory Solutions, LLC, doing business as Fusion Capital Management, an SEC-registered investment advisor. The firm only transacts business in states where it is properly registered or is excluded or exempted from registration requirements. SEC registration is not an endorsement of the firm by the commission and does not mean that the advisor has attained a specific level of skill or ability.